This will be part one of a new series of summaries regarding character evidence. This summary will cover the general rule and some of its exceptions. Notice first of all the comparison to the hearsay rule. There is a basic rule of exclusion and then several exceptions, similar to hearsay. In the case of character, however, there are only three exceptions. In the area of character evidence, unlike the hearsay rule, the method or mode of proof also matters. Let's start with the basic rule. We first saw this rule in the Old Chief case. The rule is you cannot use evidence of a person's character or trait of character to prove conduct or action in conformity with that character on a particular occasion. This is often referred to as circumstantial use of character. What is the reason for the rule? Well, we are concerned here about a jury giving inappropriate weight to evidence that would bear more heavily on a pending charge than might be appropriate. As we learned, there are three general categories of exceptions to the general rule prohibiting character evidence. First, for the character of a criminal defendant. Second, for the character of the victim. Third, for the character of a witness. Let's look at the first category, evidence of the character of the defendant. In a murder case, can the government show evidence of the ownership of other guns not used in the murder by the defendant? The court in the Zakowitz case held that such evidence was not admissible, since the guns were not linked to the particular crime, and the jury might give them too much weight. Now, notice from the rules that the use of character evidence differs significantly when character is in issue in the case. There, character evidence is generally admissible. So, just as with the hearsay rule, we need to look closely at what the character evidence is offered to prove. If it is offered to prove an issue in the case, then generally the evidence will be admissible. We saw several examples of this. First, the Cleghorn case, where evidence of the prior intoxication of an employee was offered to prove negligent hiring following a railroad accident. That was held to be admissible. Secondly, evidence of a defendant's character in a child custody case where the defendant was asked, "Did you ever kill anyone?" Next, we saw a case in which evidence of the plaintiff's sexual promiscuity and drinking was admissible in a slander case in which reputation was considered to be in issue and truth was considered to be a defense. These are all examples of a situation where character is considered in issue. Now, let's turn back to looking at what evidence of character is admissible in the criminal setting. Here, it is the defendant, the accused, that must open the door regarding character. The accused may open the door regarding the character of the accused, him or herself, that is, the defendant. If the accused opens the door regarding his or her own character, then the prosecutor can respond with evidence regarding the defendant's character as well. Typically, the defendant will offer evidence of his or her good character, and the prosecutor can then rebut that evidence with evidence of bad character. In a criminal case, the defendant may also offer evidence on the character of the victim. Once the defendant offers evidence regarding the character of the victim, the defendant opens the door in more than one way. First, the prosecution can respond with evidence regarding the character of the victim. So, for example, the defendant might offer evidence of the character of the victim for violence. Then, the prosecutor might offer evidence in response of the character of the victim for peacefulness. But the prosecutor can also show evidence of the character of the accused, the defendant, for the same trait of character. So, for example, if the defendant shows victim was violent in character, then the door is open for the prosecutor to show the victim had a peaceful character. And the door is also open for the prosecution to show that the defendant had a violent character. Finally, what if the defendant shows evidence that the victim was the aggressor in a homicide case? In that scenario, the rule provides that a prosecutor can then respond with evidence of the peacefulness of the victim. Now, let's turn to methods of proving character. First, as we said, where character is in issue, it may be proved in three different ways. It can be proved by evidence of opinion, reputation, and specific instances of conduct. In contrast, how can character be proved when it is not an issue in the case, such as in a homicide case? The rule says that character can be proven by opinion and reputation when it is not an issue in the case. But specific instances of conduct can only come in to evidence on cross-examination. We saw this in the Seitan case, where the court said the defendant cannot call a witness to give testimony about specific acts. The idea here is that specific instances of character are too strong to come in on direct. The jury might give them too much weight. But once a character evidence of reputation or opinion is admitted, then it is okay and pertinent to allow cross-examination regarding specific acts. Now, you will recall in the Michelson case, we saw that when the prosecutor asks a question on cross-exam about a specific act, the prosecutor must have evidence for it, or at least a good faith basis for asking the question. We also saw the court can give a limiting instruction in this scenario about the extent to which the jury may use the evidence. Finally, we saw in the Crapp case that where the prosecutor did not have a good faith basis for the question about the defendant's tax returns, the prosecutor's question about that specific instance of conduct was the basis for a mistrial. That's the end of this summary on the basics of character evidence.